Hello and welcome to another Cane's Beverage Newsmakers call. The purpose of these calls is to bring to our subscribers and friends interesting people who have unique insights to make your business better. We've had callers who've survived hurricanes and fires. We've had a historical look at Prohibition and how it's affected America today. And today we're taking a look at how you can protect your beer, wine, and spirits from theft while in transit. We have two experts, Walt Fountain, who is Director of Loss Prevention and Security for Schneider National, one of the nation's top transportation, intermodal, and logistics providers, and Dan Burgess, Director of Consultancy and Intelligence at FreightWatch. Schneider has employed a combination of high and low techniques to beat cargo thieves at their own game, and in 2008, the company reduced customer freight theft 31%, and in 2007, they cut it by 22%, the exact opposite of what the industry at large was experiencing. To have a good quality recording, we're going to ask that you mute yourselves by pushing the mute button on your phone or by pressing star 6. And that ensures that we get a good quality recording for the playback. And now, let's get going. Dan, why don't you introduce yourself and FreightWatch to our listeners?
Sure, Joel. Thank you for the introduction. As you said, my name is Dan Burgess, and I'm the Director of Intelligence at FreightWatch International. We are a global logistics security provider. We offer an array of customized logistics security solutions that are designed to prevent full-scale cargo theft along your supply chain. FreightWatch services include electronic freight security through covert tracking devices, 24/7 monitoring through our command and control center, manned security escorts, and on-site security assessments and intelligence. With these solutions, FreightWatch prevents logistics thefts and losses, ensures time to market, and
Hello and welcome to another Cane's Beverage Newsmakers call. The purpose of these calls is to bring to our subscribers and friends interesting people who have unique insights to make your business better. We've had callers who've survived hurricanes and fires. We've had a historical look at Prohibition and how it's affected America today. And today we're taking a look at how you can protect your beer, wine, and spirits from theft while in transit. We have two experts, Walt Fountain, who is Director of Loss Prevention and Security for Schneider National, one of the nation's top transportation, intermodal, and logistics providers, and Dan Burgess, Director of Consultancy and Intelligence at FreightWatch. Schneider has employed a combination of high and low techniques to beat cargo thieves at their own game, and in 2008, the company reduced customer freight theft 31%, and in 2007, they cut it by 22%, the exact opposite of what the industry at large was experiencing. To have a good quality recording, we're going to ask that you mute yourselves by pushing the mute button on your phone or by pressing star 6. And that ensures that we get a good quality recording for the playback. And now, let's get going. Dan, why don't you introduce yourself and FreightWatch to our listeners?
Sure, Joel. Thank you for the introduction. As you said, my name is Dan Burgess, and I'm the Director of Intelligence at FreightWatch International. We are a global logistics security provider. We offer an array of customized logistics security solutions that are designed to prevent full-scale cargo theft along your supply chain. FreightWatch services include electronic freight security through covert tracking devices, 24/7 monitoring through our command and control center, manned security escorts, and on-site security assessments and intelligence. With these solutions, FreightWatch prevents logistics thefts and losses, ensures time to market, and protects corporate brand names through loss prevention at each step along their supply chain.
Terrific, Dan. And Walt, tell us a little bit about Schneider and what you do for Schneider.
Sure. Thank you, Joel. Again, my name is Walt Fountain, and I'm the Director of Loss Prevention and Enterprise Security at Schneider. And as Joel mentioned, Schneider National is a premier provider of truckload logistics and intermodal services. And in serving more than two-thirds of the Fortune 500 companies, we do have the broadest portfolio of services in the industry. And as such, some of our transportation and logistics solutions include van truckload, which is your traditional over-the-road, long-haul truckload service. And many of you probably recognize Schneider National by our ubiquitous orange tractor and trailer combinations that you'll see out on the highways. But we also have a dedicated service that is a replacement for private fleet. We have a regional service that provides a little shorter haul capability, very nimble, and service of truckload transportation. We have a bulk service, which is a tanker truck service. We have intermodal, which is your truck-rail combination, working with our rail providers. We have transportation management, which is a brokerage service. We have supply chain management to assist folks with managing their entire supply chain. We have warehousing, which I think is pretty self-explanatory, and we have international logistics services such as freight forwarding and custom house brokerage. Many of you may know we're headquartered in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I'm not sure which side most of you were rooting for yesterday on the Minnesota Vikings, whether or not you wanted to see Favre win or fail, but around here you'll find both of those sentiments, but we do hate to see him get hurt. So,
terrific. So let's get into the meat and potatoes of this problem, but before we do, let me just mention to everybody on the call that we are recording it, and it should be posted on our website, which is bevnewsdaily.com, in about 2 or 3 hours. Bev News is short for Beverage News, so bevnewsdaily.com. And we'll have this up there in case somebody mentioned they may have to slip away at 4:30, and if they want to come back in and listen to the whole thing again, it'll be available up there. So now let's get into the meat and potatoes of this problem. How many cargo thefts occurred in 2008?
Hi, Joel. In 2008, we actually recorded just over 700 cargo theft incidents, and in 2009, we saw an increase of 12%. So for 2009, we recorded actually a total of 859 cargo theft incidents.
And what's the value of these thefts?
The value of thefts, it's quite various, you know, from commodity to commodity. The value can be anywhere from, you know, $10,000 up to, you know, $10, $20 million, depending on what products are being transported. In our database, taking an average of all 859 theft incidents, we came out to an average of approximately $500,000.
That's a hefty number, and not something I suspect that most of the people on the call would like to have to swallow if they could possibly avoid it. How many of these, do you have any data on warehouse thefts?
We do. In our 2009 database, we recorded 36 warehouse burglaries, which is just over 4% of total cargo theft incidents.
Okay, and all the rest were truckload thefts, I presume?
Correct. All the rest were truckload thefts, primarily. We have a handful of, you know, large-scale, you know, pilferage out the back of a trailer, but that's not as common as stealing the entire trailer or container.
Just take it and drive off and unload it at your leisure, huh?
Yes, sir.
And then take, if it's a container, take and park it in some field along the side roads of some state and use it for whatever purpose, I guess.
Sure.
Now, you know, I almost never read about these in the paper, and I almost never see reports on them elsewhere, so I assume this means they aren't exactly violent crimes?
Right. Cargo theft is often referred to as the silent crime. It's largely nonviolent. Matter of fact, less than 2% of all theft incidents that we have recorded involve violence. It often goes very underreported. Law enforcement may not even find out about the theft, and it's just dealt through, you know, insurance channels. And there's also minimal enforcement of cargo theft laws. There's, you know, if someone's arrested and prosecuted, they often receive probation or minimal time in prison. And because of that, it's just not a big draw for media attention and otherwise.
And I presume because it's not enforced by the law enforcement authorities or not prosecuted by them, that this is one reason why the industry as a whole doesn't do prosecutions very often?
Well, I think it's a mix of, you know, name brand recognition. You know, I think, you know, no one wants to be associated with having losses. And like you, you know, like you just mentioned, capture of the cargo thieves is a very, very difficult thing. You know, unless you are literally catching them in the act, or have a means of tracking down your cargo while the criminals have it in their hands, you know, getting to the people who actually are doing these thefts is a very difficult enterprise.
I guess that makes sense. Now, how many of these, or how prevalent is alcohol in these thefts? Because most of our listeners are in the beer, wine, or spirits businesses.
Sure, sure. Alcohol industry specifically, by volume, makes up approximately 3 to 5% of total cargo theft. However, if you include the food and beverage industry as a whole, that actually comprises about 20 to 25% of total cargo theft in the U.S.
That's interesting because more and more alcoholic beverage wholesalers in particular are getting into a broader line of either beverage distribution or food and beverage both.
Sure.
As it just reconsolidates and evolves.
Sure, and that's one thing that cargo thieves look for is something that's very easily movable after the theft, and food and beverage products, by the very nature, are very, very easy for them to sell after the theft has occurred.
Okay. Now, can you tell us how these thefts happen? I mean, does somebody just jump in the cab and drive off? Or you know?
Well,
if I want to be a crook, how do I do it?
There's a lot of ways that it occurs. There's two basic modes that cargo thieves operate in. The first is what we refer to as the potluck method. Cargo thieves will kind of hang out at a truck stop or a rest stop. They'll wait for a load to be left unattended by the driver. You know, ideally, you know, keys in the ignition, engine left running, just kind of sitting there. They'll do just what you said. They'll jump in it, drive off, pull over, see what they have. If it's something they want, they'll keep it and move on. If not, then they just abandon it on the side of the road. The more prevalent this half of the decade has been cargo thieves proactively seeking out product to steal. Instead of just getting what they happen to get, they're finding certain products that they want specifically. They'll find where they're being manufactured or where they're being distributed from. They'll conduct surveillance at those locations and then follow loads as they depart, and then again wait for the driver to leave the load unattended and then attempt to steal the load at that point.
This does not sound like a amateur activity. I mean, it sounds like it's a really organized ring-type operation.
Cargo theft, we refer to it as a loosely organized crime. It is organized in the sense that it's small groups traveling and conducting these crimes, usually anywhere from 2 to 6 or 8, depending on how far they're traveling and how big their organization is. South Florida, New Jersey, and Los Angeles are home to kind of the three major cargo theft gangs in the U.S., and these gangs will travel the entire U.S. To acquire the products that they want. Also worth noting is that there are people who make their lives brokering these stolen loads after they've been acquired, and these cargo theft gangs will go out and steal loads that literally may have already been sold. And they're just simply fulfilling that order for these brokers.
Interesting. So the mere fact that you're out in the middle of Pennsylvania or Kansas or someplace like that doesn't guarantee that you may not be hit by one of these gangs out of New Jersey or Los Angeles or Florida then.
Right, absolutely. I ran a map of trailers and containers that were recovered in Miami. And I ran the maps of where the theft locations occurred, and they were occurring in Indianapolis, Chicago, Texas, and all through the Northeast.
Interesting. Well, I'm from Indianapolis, so we're never happy to hear Indianapolis things. any sort of bad problems. But
sure.
Indianapolis is, in fact, sort of a trucking center also.
It is. As a matter of fact, Plainfield has really kind of become more of a cargo theft hot spot for us over the past year or two.
Okay. Now, what days are these thefts most likely to occur? Because if I'm the transportation director or the security director for a supplier or a wholesaler, I may want to take special action on those days, I would guess.
Sure, sure. The most common is over the weekend. It's hard to give a pinpoint specific days, just because a lot of times thefts occur when a load has been dropped, say on a Friday afternoon, and then the driver comes back on Saturday or Sunday to pick it up, and it's gone. So there's a significant window in there that it could have been taken. But charting by either date of theft or date that it was reported stolen, Friday, Saturday, Sunday are by far the most common. And then conversely, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday kind of have the inverse bell curve for the volume of cargo theft.
And you might have said that, but can you explain why the weekend seems to be a high target area? Is it just because the truck gets loaded and then parked and off they go?
Or? Right, that's exactly right. There's two different modes. There's at a warehouse or distribution center, they'll load a trailer. It'll be ready to go. They'll lock it, seal it. But then the order to pick it up may not come until, say, the following Monday. And so then that loaded trailer will sit there in the parking lot of that facility over the weekend. Matter of fact, there was a gentleman arrested for cargo theft in California who kind of opened up about how he did it, and he exclusively looked for that specific MO. Loaded on Friday, left over the weekend, because he could steal it and know that it would not be reported until, you know, that following Monday, and that gave him 2 or 3 days to move the product without risk of being captured because there was no police report. But, and then the following would be, you know, a driver who's driving, he's had his hours or whatever the case may be, he's stopping over the weekend, and then he would leave his trailer somewhere over the weekend.
I was going to say, on the pickups for my guests, the supplier location, the manufacturer, or something like that, I would have thought that they would have, you know, if they're going to have loaded trailers, they would have them in a high security fence area, or am I wrong, or does the guy drive it off?
It kind of runs the gamut. You know, some distributors or manufacturers, you do have, you know, high security fences, guards, etc., and some don't, and it's just, and that's the things that the cargo thieves look for when they go and conduct surveillance. They find out, you know, if they can steal it from your parking lot, or if they need to wait for a driver to take it and then wait for him to leave it alone. And those are the things that they look for when they conduct surveillance to steal one of your product loads.
Okay, so I guess one of the takeaways is that if people don't have a high security fence, they ought to consider that at least as a preventive measure, huh?
Oh, sure. I mean, there's a myriad of preventive measures, and they all have to be applicable to your situation and what would be effective.
Now, do you have any idea of whether most of these thefts are from wholesalers, from beverage manufacturers, or from contract carriers?
It's really all of the above. As I kind of alluded to before, what these gangs do is they look for the weakest point in the supply chain to steal it. If the wholesaler or the distributor have a very tight operation, not a lot of room for them to be able to get in, steal the product, and get out without being detected, then they may wait for the next point in that supply chain, whoever they may hand it off to. Mm-hmm. A third-party carrier who got subcontracted in might be that weak point. They really don't discriminate, going just after distributors or just after carriers. It's really any point in there where they feel they can exploit the current security infrastructure.
Okay. Now, are there any troubling trends that you've seen in the last couple of years?
I guess really the most troubling trend that we've seen is the continued growth of cargo theft, even though in the industry it's really becoming a more known topic and companies are doing more and more to prevent cargo theft. But in total volume, it still continues to rise at a steady rate of over 10%, which just shows how adaptive these gangs are at stealing product and finding, you know, other companies or other sources where they can acquire the product from, you know, avoiding the more secure transportation providers.
Sure. Now, would you like to go into a little discussion about what can be done to prevent these thefts?
Actually, I was thinking Walt might be a better one for that, since that's kind of his expertise.
Okay.
As my job is really more to track, trend, and analyze the thefts that are occurring, he might be able to give some better details as to what can be done to prevent them.
Walt?
Yeah, absolutely, Dan and Joel. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate Dan's expertise on giving us a wider view of the problem across our industry. He does a great job of that, and many of us do rely on his information. But as we try and prevent these thefts, the first thing that I would like to note is that a lot of people equate supply chain security with cargo theft, and really the security of your supply chain is impacted by load securement, brand protection issues, to name a couple. You know, when you think about it, we generally will say that freight at rest is at freight at risk, and so anything that slows down that freight or causes it to stop within the chain creates a vulnerability. So poor securement can lead to load rework, and obviously that rework then creates additional vulnerabilities and delays within your supply chain. Your brand protection can range anywhere from protection against contraband being introduced into your product or negative publicity about your product being involved in some sort of a safety or security incident. So I just want to keep that in mind, because obviously we focus on cargo theft and we talk a lot about it, but there's other aspects of your supply chain security. So as you think about the theft issue in general, as I said, one of the things you want to do is try and keep your freight moving. And one way to do that is to make sure that you have good coordination on your load. If you have windows for pickup or in delivery activities, that really reduces the opportunity for that load to sit. If you have a specific appointment time and the driver shows up early, the driver has to go somewhere with that load, and sometimes that may not be a secure location. So again, giving them a window keeps that freight moving and keeps it moving in a secure manner. Another thing that certainly that from our policy perspective is we ensure that our drivers have the ability to put on 200 miles from pickup to their first stop. As Dan mentioned, there's a part of the threat are organized crews, and these crews know where the product is coming from. They will track that product right out of the out of the manufacturer or out of the warehouse to the first point of vulnerability. And if the driver picks up that load and stops at a truck stop 10 miles down the road, you can guarantee it's going to get hit. So certainly that's something that we focus on. And then that obviously means you have to have coordination with the driver to ensure they're properly fueled, and you have to have coordination between the driver and the leader to ensure that they have their hours of service remaining to be able to move the load that far. Some other things that certainly we look at to help prevent is making sure that the driver and the leader discuss any modifications to the trip plan. Those modifications can be driven by customer service issues, they can be driven by weather, they can be driven by many things, but again, opening that line of communications between the driver and the leader definitely assists. Using only approved parking areas is clearly a key read. As Dan mentioned, many of these issues occur in public areas such as truck stops, rest areas, etc., and we want to make sure that the drivers are stopping when they are required to stop for their hours of service, Department of Transportation breaks, that they're doing that in an approved area. Just some simple things, such as training the drivers to back their load up against a building or a pole to prevent the rear doors from opening. In fact, we've placed some people generally refer to them as jersey barriers, and we'll stack those concrete barriers to create a about an 8-foot barrier in our yards, which allows the drivers to back up against those, which prevents those rear doors from opening. So again, it's just an additional protection. A couple other things is use of the kingpin lock when the driver disconnects from the trailer. The kingpin lock goes up on the kingpin that fits into the fifth wheel, and by putting that lock on there prevents it from being hooked up to another tractor until the lock is removed. We use another product called an air cuff lock, and it's a lock that fits over the air release buttons on the dashboard. And what that does, when you put that lock around those air buttons, what it does is it doesn't allow the air pressure to be released from the lines, which means it's very difficult, one, to move the tractor, nearly impossible, move the tractor or the trailer when you have that air engaged. It can be very dangerous if someone just decides to cut the air lines, and generally the thieves will move on to another load. When you talk about, Joel and I were talking earlier on the call about what a lot of the conveyances look like, the trailers look like, and how they're painted. One thing that we've found is that our orange color on our trailers has been somewhat of a deterrent to the thieves. Thieves don't want anything that's going to stick out. So if you have a plain white trailer that blends in with the multitude of other plain white trailers moving on the highway, they feel more comfortable with that situation. So again, how your trailer is painted, how it, you know, what kind of information's on it. We'll talk probably a little bit later about having identification information on it, but again, having something that will cause the thieves to think twice about stealing that particular conveyance. And lastly, I don't know how many of the listeners ship intermodal, that's the truck rail option, but one thing that we have found recently, certainly that we've executed over about the last 18 months, has been a program with our rail providers to provide us what we call lower well car access. By putting a container down into a well car, the well car creates a natural barrier of about 4 to 5 feet on the end, which means that you can't get the doors of that container open when it's sitting down in that well car. And obviously, you know, they could still try and cut into the sides or whatever. But again, they'll move along and go attack someone else's container rather than yours because it's sitting down in that lower well car.
Good. So I wonder, and you might have already discussed this, but if you didn't, can I assume that you can seal the shipment so that it's harder to get into? Obviously, that well car sure does a good job of sealing, as does backing up against a stack of Jersey barriers. Those of us who lived in New Jersey or currently live in New Jersey, that's one of our great contributions to America, as this indicates here. But can you seal the shipment, or does sealing make any difference?
Well, you know, there's a difference between locks and seals, Joel, and when you talk about locks, generally they're a delaying technique. I certainly encourage them. There's many different types of locks out there that create a different type of barrier across the back doors. But generally, I've certainly not found a lock that can't be defeated. What we do is when we test high security locks, we allow our maintenance and our training folks to just kind of have a good time with them on some of our old trailers, and just see if they can't break into some of them, and in every case they can. Some are easier than others to defeat, but in every case a lock can be defeated. And that's why, as I mentioned earlier, I think it's important to create, even in when your freight is at rest, that you create even an additional barrier to those doors being open, a physical barrier. But as we talk about seals, a seal is actually just evidence of tampering. And again, certainly a worthwhile endeavor to put a high security seal, either a bolt seal or a cable seal, on the back of the load, that, because again, it gives you a greater surety that that load has not been tampered with. With anything, people figure out a way to defeat them. Certainly defeating a seal to remove it is relatively straightforward. Defeating a seal to actually make it look as if it's not been opened is also possible, but certainly a little bit more complex. But I would not allow that to deter anybody from using seals. And the key with a seal is to make sure that that seal number is recorded and inspected throughout the entire movement. And that's all the way from when it is initially sealed, that seal number is put on the bill of lading, to as that container or trailer is moving, every time the driver stops, as they do an inspection before they begin to move again, they should be inspecting that seal to ensure it's still intact and recording that action. There are some other seals out there that can be helpful. There's a thing called a hinge seal. It's a very lightweight foil that could be placed over the hinges. So again, gives you additional indication that those doors have been opened. That can be very helpful. The other thing that certainly that we've employed in our Mexican operations is to actually take a photo of the sealed doors. And the reason we do that is because sometimes on the other end, you'll end up with some sort of anomaly or a potential anomaly, and it's very helpful to be able to compare that photograph that was taken at when the load was initially sealed to the situation you now have on the ground and decide whether or not anything untoward has happened. As the other point about seals is to is really that that information can cut both ways, and that you need to make sure again that you have clear, accurate information flow within your organization and its business partners to make sure that that information is being passed along.
Good. Well, now, you know, guys, with all the talk about GPS, I would assume that you could track a truck from loading to final delivery so that if somebody did steal the truck, that you could very quickly recover it. Am I right? Am I wrong? Or am I just sort of loony?
There are. You absolutely can, Joel. It lot depends on what level of accuracy that you require. Certainly all of our tractors and all of our trailers have an operational GPS on them. It's tied in through the Qualcomm system on the tractor, and the trailers have an independent system that's also run by Qualcomm. And that provides us information about the location of those two pieces of equipment. The real challenge comes in is what do you do about your knowledge of the location? How can you tell whether or not that tractor and trailer are where they're supposed to be and are proceeding as you expect them to proceed? And that's where you get into the piece of geofencing, the route that you expect that tractor and trailer to proceed, and making sure that you have an alert system and a response system to be able to react when that equipment or wanders off that geofenced route. And what we have found certainly is we work with many shippers who put an additional GPS embedded tracker into their loads. What we find is that technology is a wonderful thing, but sometimes it can provide some unexpected results. The satellites obviously provide you a level of accuracy. Some of the systems go up on cell towers at triangulation, and again provides you a level of accuracy. And what you have to be able to do is have the experience to be able to work through how you set up those geofences, how you react to those different alerts. And it can be a great advantage to you when you have both a shipper, a consignee, and a carrier that have secured visibility to the freight movement, because they're all ready to receive the load, they're all ready to move the load, they're all ready to deliver the load, and so again, you can keep that load moving at a maximum velocity. But again, you need to have a system in your back office that's going to allow you to be able to deal with those alerts when things appear as if they're not going correctly.
Okay, well, that's pretty clear. Now, how about advertising on the truck? You know, the marketing people tell us that the more people see the name of the product, the more likely they are to buy the product. And certainly Anheuser-Busch and Coca-Cola have been past masters of this. I will never forget once driving from Anaheim, California, down to Los Angeles, and I saw a Budweiser 18-wheeler pull up beside me. You know, out of the corner of my eye, I could see it coming up, and the first thing I saw was the Budweiser bow tie on the cab. And as it pulled on further along, The Budweiser bow tie was on the side of the truck, and as it pulled away from me, kicking gravel up onto the windshield, I saw first the Budweiser bow tie on the back of the trailer, and then as it got further away, I saw that even the mud flaps had the Budweiser bow tie on them, which led me to call this the Budweiser mud flap theory of marketing. It sounds like, from what you've said, that this is really a very smart idea, because historically in the spirits industry, they've tended not to put any markings on their trucks, telling me that one reason they don't is because they're concerned that if they say, you know, Johnny Walker on the side, thieves will go off and try to steal a truckload of Johnny Walker.
Well, we've certainly seen indications of that. Certainly in the past, we worked closely with electronics manufacturers who were having some difficulty with some thefts. And, you know, they told us the story about how they'd put a container of large TVs onto the rail. And, you know, we're talking about a mile-long freight train, mostly double-stacked with containers. And, you know, you're talking about hundreds of containers on there. And four containers were broken into, and lo and behold, all four contained large-screen TVs. So clearly, this is an issue. There are thieves and organized groups out there that are targeting specific products, and I would not be surprised at all if they're not targeting alcohol and alcoholic beverages. But it becomes an issue, really, of risk management. Your brand markings, as you said, you know, provide you brand exposure, but then they also increase your risk. So you have to, I feel it's necessary for the customer and the carrier to work together to recognize, you know, what is the appetite for risk acceptance, what is the risk out there. We certainly recommend to our customers that there is no indication of the contents, no brand recognition. But again, it's a trade-off that has to be made. One thing I will tell you is sometimes it doesn't have to be as obvious as having Budweiser painted on the side of the conveyance, because as I told you about those electronics manufacturers, what we found out was what was giving those loads away was the way they were putting their seals on the back of the containers. They would always use the same color seal, and they always used a high security bolt seal in combination with a cable seal, and again the colors of those two items remained constant. So it was very easy for the thieves to be able to decide this was manufacturer A because the seals look like this, this is manufacturer B because the seals look like that, and they were just picking off those loads as if they had the container numbers written down.
Interesting. Well, it sounds to me like if you're concerned about having your product name on the side of your trailer, maybe the thing to do is run ads for the Marines or the Army or the Air Force, and you know, hopefully if not all your fleet says the same service, then they won't know whether they're dealing with the Marine band being shipped across the country or beer or wine or spirits. So interesting challenge, I guess, for the security director of all these companies. Do you have any idea how many of these thefts are inside jobs? It would seem to me that a ring of thieves would want to get into the warehouse or be driving the trucks or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think common sense tells us that, you know, there's an inside threat. Certainly in the retail world, I was looking up some numbers here a couple weeks ago, and I saw that they believe that 43.7% of shrinkage is attributable to employee theft, whereas only 34% is attributable to shoplifting. So, again, it's obviously an issue out there. And it's often overlooked when you examine the security of your supply chain is that aspect of character, awareness, and cooperation of the persons in the chain. And that clearly can be the weak link or the strength that can overcome your threats within the chain. One of the things that we certainly look at is conducting good background checks on our associates. The other thing that we believe is that there is a there is a tie between a disciplined workforce and a secure workplace. And we do a lot of safety performance monitoring. We have certainly one of the safest fleets in the industry, and we feel that that discipline, the same discipline that's required to have a safe fleet, is the same discipline that's required to have a secure fleet. And we certainly track that very closely. The other thing that many of you are aware, and the Department of Transportation requires those in our industry to have routine urine-based drug tests, and we've added hair follicle testing in addition to that, because again, we think that we find that you know, quite honestly, you're going to catch the dumb users using the urine-based test because it's such a short duration that it's able to pick up. But the hair follicle test goes back 90 days, so you find those individuals that are habitually using drugs, and they create a safety as well as security risk for your fleet. So we think that's very important to try and tie those things together.
Well, terrific. This is all very very useful and helpful information. Are there any other preventive actions a supplier or a wholesaler might take to ensure that their product is safe as it's being moved around the country?
I think that we've talked about many of them, Joel, and I think through it, a lot of this is just making sure that you synchronize your actions and those of your business partners and service providers, making sure that everybody's on the same page. We certainly recommend and encourage you know, our customers to regularly bring their team together, either physically or virtually, to examine the effectiveness of their security measures, where they think the vulnerabilities exist, do a little gap analysis, and then get after closing those gaps. Again, if you think very simply about freight at rest is freight at risk, you can think through all the opportunities in your chain where that might occur. One of the things that that we find has been very successful for us is expedited service. What that basically means is we put a team of drivers on the load so that the load spends very little time at rest, because either one driver or the other driver is moving it in accordance with their hours of service, and they're able to move that safely and securely. Obviously, they always have to stop. They have to continue. They do will have to stop for fuel and other things, and we try to make sure that we're routing those into our secure facilities to gain that fuel. But even if they end up stopping at a truck stop or whatever, there's always one driver stays with the load, and obviously that assists in protecting that load against any kind of tampering or theft. So those are the types of things that I think are important for folks to come together. Just glancing over my notes, Joel, another point that I did leave out earlier is making sure that the drivers and the other workers in the supply chain are just aware of what is an anomaly, what doesn't look right, and they have the confidence and the training to report those anomalies rapidly to their own leadership or, as appropriate, to law enforcement. And we've had great success over the last couple of years in training our drivers to do that, and it really does warm my heart to hear that we had a driver that had a confidence in their own professionalism to be able to recognize when something wasn't right and to report it promptly and, again, you know, potentially head off some criminal activity.
Good. Well, let's open this up now to any questions from people on the call. If you've muted yourself, don't forget to unmute yourself. We can't hear you if you're muted. And if you use star 6, you can unmute yourself by pressing star 6 also. So are there any questions from anybody?
This is Fred Keel at Transport Topics.
Hi, Fred.
Hi. I'm wondering what the basis is of how wide of numbers you have to base this assertion that cargo thefts are growing at an annual rate of 10%. Where do you get your base figures, and how wide are they?
The base figures we have
are from our own database. We actively track all cargo thefts reported in the United States. Now, granted, as we said before, we know we don't get them 100%, but through Transportation Security Councils, cargo theft task forces from California, Florida, New Jersey, etc., through our client base and through open media, we've been collecting cargo theft data since 2006. We also share our database with Chubb Insurance, who retrospectively shares theirs with us. We're able to compare our databases and add thefts that we don't have. Chubb Insurance recorded just under 800 thefts this year, at roughly the same growth rate that we had from 2008 to 2009. So like we said, as our databases become more and more thorough, we really feel like we're getting a much better grasp on cargo theft as a whole, and specifically on the significantly high value theft, you know, the 500,000 plus loads. Sure, there's a lot of, you know, low scale theft that might be occurring that we're not finding out about, but in terms of, you know, say an alcohol load or something similar to that, we feel confident we're getting. I estimate 75%. It's probably a good guess. And at a minimum, we're providing a good snapshot of the trends that cargo theft has been seen over the past few years.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Bruce Richards with the Private Motor Truck Council of Canada, and I found this really interesting. We have put up on our website a security checklist for our members that we've developed in part with the RCMP up here. But one of the things that we've found in our analysis of this, of what we're calling cargo crime, is that one of the things that keeps us from getting what we think is the right attention from law enforcement and government is the lack of reporting. So I'm interested in the comments there on how much is reported. We're finding that there are fleets out there that simply don't want to report because, for various reasons, they don't want their customers, their competitors, whomever, to know. It's easier, cheaper in the long run to pay the entire cost of it if it's marginally over your deductible. That sorts of rationale, if you will. And I'm wondering if folks from Schneider National or anybody else down there have some ideas on how we can go about getting this industry to actually report every single incident of cargo crime so that we can build a decent database and get the attention of the politicos and law enforcement to the problem. Be interested in any comments on that.
You know, that's a very interesting kind of question and I guess topic. Certainly, I guess I can really only speak for my company, and that is that we report all thefts to law enforcement without fail. And, you know, maybe it's, as I think through the challenge, and I can appreciate the challenge. I really can. Very competitive industry. You know, at certain levels, when you talk about, you know, price and things like that, it tends to appear to be a very commoditized business, so everybody wants to make sure that they don't look weaker than anybody else. But one thing that certainly I have found over the past several years has been that by reporting our information rapidly, accurately, and providing all of the assistance that we have available to law enforcement, you know, we've made some really great contacts and receives just some fantastic assistance from law enforcement, because they realize that we're not going to just fire a report and then not back it up, or if they actually do find these thieves, are we actually going to come to the table with the information that's going to allow them to have a chance at some sort of trial or conviction. That's, you know, having that, I guess, confidence in each other is certainly is of assistance. One thing I will tell you, and this may lead somewhat to the problem, is many of the law enforcement, the local law enforcement, They don't have a real clear understanding of cargo theft. They haven't obviously worked in the transportation industry. They don't understand how we do business. And so in some cases, that can be a level of frustration, and perhaps other members of our industry just kind of give up and decide that it's just not worth their effort. But certainly what we have found the most success with, obviously we have to report things to the local law enforcement, but we also simultaneously report it to the appropriate regional task force. In the United States, we have several cargo theft task forces. You have one in Florida, known as the Tomcats. You have a couple over in California, CTIP being the one that we've had great success with. I mean, the California Highway Patrol just does a bang-up job, very professional, understand the issue, understand the concerns, and have been very successful for us in combating theft as well as recovering loads. So we certainly appreciate their efforts. But there's other task forces in the Southwest, the Southeast. There's one in the Midwest now. Just started up here about a year and a half ago. What we find is we do really two reports. And there's one in New Jersey, too. I don't want to hold... Don't want to forget my friends out there in the Northeast. But the what we find is by reporting it really twice, once to the local police, and then we report it to the task force and make sure that they get a copy of the police report, we really feel as if we're giving... those that are charged with enforcing the law the best opportunity to do so. So I really, all I can tell you is certainly our experience has been very positive. I cannot imagine us going back to a silence is golden attitude if we've ever had one, but you know, certainly getting that information out there is certainly paid off for us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that comment, and I got to tell you, speaking down from Canada, I'm envious as hell that you have these task forces in place. We don't seem to have any situation here where police forces trust this, any central database or anything of that nature, and that's what we're working on. To their credit, the police come together with us in the last couple of months to try and assess the magnitude of this issue and the steps that we might need to take, but you guys, certainly with those task forces in place, and I really am envious. So thanks again. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. And just to emphasize what Walt was saying is, what we've seen is companies that traditionally would not report their crimes or their losses, rather, they're seeing their competitors get successful recoveries. And that's really seems to kind of drive home that if you're proactive with your information sharing, you can benefit from, you know, a $250,000 up to several million-dollar load being recovered by simply being proactive and reporting your crime through various sources and to these task forces. And 2009 has been a very, very successful year for law enforcement in recovering loads intact and returning them to the owners. And that really kind of drives the motivation to end the whole silence concept and really get your information out there quickly.
Good. Any other questions on the call?
Yeah, hi. This is Glenn Wilson from CalSpan. Actually, I have a couple comments and invitation to make. We're a private research and development firm up here in Buffalo, New York. We've been contracted by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration to look at this exact problem of cargo theft throughout the United States. One of our tasks is to actually look at truck-based technology used to help prevent cargo theft. So actually, Walt and Dan, I'd like to thank you for your presentations. They're very interesting. It's gone to help validate some of our research that we've been immersing ourselves in for the past 3 months or so. But what I'd like to do is invite anybody out there who is listening to contact me and tell me your story about your experience with implementing some of this technology, such as GPS and cellular triangulation. Joel, is it okay if I give out my phone number and email address?
Absolutely.
My name is Glenn Wilson, GLENN.Wilson, as in the football,